Welcome to Legal Talk with attorney Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Auto accidents, DUIs, slip and falls, each one can change your life. But the trial-tested, trial-ready attorneys at Flesh and Beck Law relieve your legal burden. Whether you need to heal from an injury or protect your future in a criminal matter, the legal team at Flesh and Beck Law is prepared to defend your rights. Now, here's Legal Talk with your host, Scott Whatley, and attorney Kevin Flesh.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Whatley. We are glad you are with us. Our show is brought to you by the law firm of Flesh and Beck Law. You can check out their website, fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H lawfirm.com. And the number, 303-806-8886. And with that, we will welcome Mr. Flesh. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Scott.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
The weeks just keep passing by.
It does. It's crazy. I just thought I was here.
I know. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, when you're every week,
yeah.
It comes pretty quick.
It does.
Absolutely. All right. Let's talk about some things here with insurance and all. And you know, you're a trial lawyer as well, and you'll take these cases to court. But we were just kind of talking before we started the show today, and you qualified it as the elephant in the room.
Yeah. So, you know, we always talk about what plaintiffs should do to maximize the recovery. I thought this week or the next couple of weeks that we talk about what the insurance companies do in the sense of their strategies of minimizing what a plaintiff can recover in regards to their personal injury cases. And it's a lot of things that people don't think about. But the elephant in the room in a trial is that whenever I file suit against an at-fault party, I never file suit against their insurance company. It's always the at-fault party alone. And so the jury gets to hear about one person is suing another person. And even in a car accident, they never, in fact, I'm excluded. I can't bring up the fact that that driver has insurance. And that the lawyer, 98% of the time that's representing them in court is been hired by the insurance company, and any judgment most likely that will be gotten by the plaintiff will be paid by that insurance company. But I can never bring up that there's insurance that is actually involved and that somebody will take care of it through their insurance. There's questions in jury selection that the judges normally ask. Mm-hmm. There's a specific question about insurance companies. And normally what the court will do is ask you a question as to whether or not you're an employee, shareholder, or have any financial interest in a particular insurance company. When you hear that question as to jury selection, you most likely have now found out which insurance company is actually representing the defendant.
Okay.
Some judges are pretty good about suggesting three or four different insurance companies and not just one, so that if that would affect anybody's decision in making a decision in the case, that they have several different insurance companies that are involved. But that's the only time in a personal injury case you'll hear about insurance being involved. And I've had one particular situation. I had a trial in Pueblo. Oh, this is probably 10 or 12 years ago now, where I had a client that was significantly injured by a 16-year-old driver. And we had sued the 16-year-old driver and her parents. And the jury was, I think, sympathetic to that driver. And they knew that they were going to have to award damages, but they didn't know how much they could award or how much they should award. And specifically in the jury instructions that they were given, they were able to award whatever they thought was appropriate without any reference to insurance.
Okay.
So we get done with our closing arguments and all of the evidence. It was a pretty long trial, and my client had a sort of a strange injury. She actually had a coccyx injury, which is the end of your tailbone, and that had broken off in the trauma of the accident. And it was a pretty significant injury, had to have some surgery, and then she had some problems with the response to that surgery in the way of infections and things, because it's a bad spot in your body have an
tender
opening.
Tender area,
yes,
we'll
a very tender area. And so the jurors, I think, were aware of that, and they recognized that the defendant was at fault. But the defendant testified well, and she was a likable young lady, and the jurors didn't want to cause her, I think, too much trouble financially. And so their first question, once they went back to deliberate, is, we want to know how much your insurance was. And of course, we couldn't give them that information. And so then they started to speculate about what she probably had for a policy. Mm-hmm. And their jury verdict was based upon what they thought her policy limit was. Well, in this particular case, the 16-year-old had basic limits, so she had a $25,000 policy. But I had, my client had a $1 million underinsured, uninsured motorist policy available. So the jurors guessed 25, and they only awarded 25. That's what, they came up with exactly the amount that they thought she had for insurance. And what happened in that case is, even though I had a client that had $1 million worth of damages, the jurors came back with a speculative judgment amount because of what they thought the insurance was going to be. And that's why we don't use, mm-hmm. or that's why we don't give information about the amount of the policy limits, so that it doesn't impact how the jury responds.
Are there ever guidelines given to, you know, somebody loses a leg? Are there any, do they ask, are there any guidelines given of, you know, maximum?
Yeah, they're really, so only in workers' comp do they do they put sort of those, you lose a finger and you get $2,500 or, you know, stuff like that. It's much more driven by how that particular plaintiff's life is affected by the loss of something. I had somebody lose, I think, a spleen in an accident a few years ago, and we were trying to figure out, well, what's a spleen worth, you know, and we sort of we sort of went through and did some analysis and jury verdicts on that. And so then we asked the insurance company for a particular dollar value, and we came to a value on it. So we didn't have a jury decide that. But a lot of times in the jury deliberations, it's whatever they feel comfortable with, six people making a decision unanimously as to what the value is. And you can get some experts to come in and talk about sort of, you know, use of that, whatever is lost and how that affects you. But it is really a common sense sort of thing. The experts can help you both, help and hurt, depending upon the circumstance. But a lot of times the jurors will specifically get an instruction that even if it's hard to calculate, you still have to do it, and the six of you will have to come up with a number. And so we try to help them in those situations. And that's the strange thing about the insurance, is because on one hand, people would say, well, it would make it a lot easier to know. So then if you do have, you know, a concern about the defendant, you know, being forced into bankruptcy or that their assets are being taken and you feel bad for them about that. One of the instructions is no sort of empathy or you know, you can't feel bad for the person and that affect your jury verdict. It's got to be a more logical way of, this is what it is. But, you know, we're all human beings.
Sure.
We all have feelings about these things. And so it does come up, and we try to help the jury in making decisions. What I generally will do is give the jury an idea of what we think is appropriate and reasonable under the circumstances, and then go through our calculations for those and give them a number so they have a number to start at. But sometimes the case is such that I've also had cases where I give them sort of an argument about, well, what would this be worth to you, and consider how it affects your life. And then you decide on what you think the number is and leave it open to the jury, because sometimes the jurors, in their wisdom as a group, will come up with a number that's a much more rational thought than what I would have. So it all depends on the jury and how I think the jury is made up. If I think they're really going to be looking for, like the ones in Pueblo, I gave them a specific number because I was worried about exactly what they did, and that is sort of speculating about what that insurance policy was.
And then when you've got multiple people in a car, how does, I mean...
Yeah, so it's even... Right, and that's, again, why you don't have an issue with regard to what the policy is, because every policy is different. So, first of all, the face amount, how much they would pay in total for the damages to the in the accident, but then you've got to divvy that up in regards to the individual plaintiffs, and sometimes it can be really hard to do that, especially in cases where you have a small amount, and how, you know, this one person has $40,000 in medical, and another has 10, but at those 10... $100,000 in medical, they've lost a limb or something like that, and they didn't have a whole lot to do, you know, does that person that has $10,000 get a quarter of the policy because the other one has $40,000 or 20%, you know, based upon the total amount of meds? Because some insurance companies will do that. They'll take a look at the total amount of the medical bills and try to divvy it up that way. That's one of the ways that insurance companies look at what your injury is worth, is based upon the total medical.
Right, right.
And so it all depends.
So at the beginning, you say you file suit against, you know, Mr. Brown, not against Allstate, let's say.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, see, absolutely.
After all these years, see, I thought when you always file suit, it was against the insurance
company. No, it's never in Colorado against the insurance company. The only time I get to bring in an insurance company is an underinsured, uninsured motorist claim where you're suing your own company. And then you're actually, then the insurance company's in the caption. But otherwise, never there.
Wow.
And many people think that. Well, you know, and a lot of times people harbor ill will towards the insurance company, not necessarily against the person that caused the injury, because a lot of times those people aren't the ones that are saying no. It's their insurance company that is saying it.
Sure. Again, Kevin Flesh is our guest each week. You're listening to Legal Talk. Now, let's talk about maybe some specific, and I think we'll call them what they are, tactics.
Yes.
I mean,
they are. They're complete legal tactics.
This is why we say don't do this on your own, because you know what? You're dealing with a well-trained professional to try to, for them to try to keep as much money away from you as they can.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they're in the business of doing that. They're in the business of getting, you know, their policyholders pay a premium, and they're there to cover the defense costs and also the amount that they'll have to pay towards any losses relating to those accidents or injuries related to those negligent acts. And that's what insurance company is there to do. They pool risk and then they try to pay as little as possible, because they're getting this money in, they're taking that money and investing it, whatever they can, to get the highest return relating to those monies that they get in. And then they want to pay out as little as possible, because the difference is their profit. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's completely a good way for everyone to pool their risk and then have the ability to have somebody there to take care of them when you need it. The same can be true on the plaintiff's side. It's an adversarial process at that point, because you're taking money from a company that's trying to make profits. If they don't make profits, they go out of business. And so you can't, I mean, as much as we complain about the things that they do, I get why they do it for a business reason, to make sure that they continue to stay in business. But some of the things go beyond that sometimes. And these are some of the things that we're sort of talking about today that are tactics that I think are sometimes, and in the first one, the sudden emergency that we'll talk about, that's sort of gone away. It used to be a real big tactic that they used, and now our Colorado Supreme Court is saying, well, maybe you can't use it quite the way you've wanted to in the past, because it sort of makes the case that just because something happens doesn't mean that you have to be reasonable. You don't have to be reasonable in your efforts. So that in the first go around with regard to the sort of sudden emergency, that was a defense that previously, basically the way the insurance company would use it is, let's say, for example, you're driving down I-25 and all of a sudden you get into a dust storm, and the dust storm reduces your visibility from 500 yards to 5 yards. And the argument is, well, if somebody rear-ended you or caused an accident while you were in that dust storm, that's a sudden emergency. And so they lost the ability to act reasonably under the circumstances because of this crazy thing that happened. And that worked for some jurors in the past,
right,
with regard to how exactly a jury would look at that and say, oh, yeah, you're probably right. Then, you know, you don't have to slow down significantly and you don't have to have a good sharp lookout even in that 5 yards, that the defendant gets a pass and then the insurance company doesn't have to pay. Well, the Colorado Supreme Court recently, within the last few years, has said, well, not exactly, because the idea is that everybody in that situation needs to act reasonably and everybody needs to slow down and needs to do what they can to make sure that they don't impact another vehicle. And if everyone is doing that, then we don't have any accidents. But if you're not acting reasonably and you do rear-end somebody, then you have to be responsible for that. And you can't just say, well, it's just an accident. It's not a negligent act. And so that was a tactic that was used for years by the insurance company, that some of the effectiveness with regard to that has been limited by the Colorado Supreme Court, because you still have to they then have to prove that their actions were reasonable, and even being reasonable, they still were the cause of the accident, but they weren't at fault, basically. Okay. And it makes it much more difficult, because even in my example, if you can't see, you got to slow down significantly so that you have enough time to react so that you don't respond to someone in a negative way and cause an accident.
Right.
Yep.
All right. Now, we've got something listed called comparative negligence. What do we mean with that?
So in Colorado, what it means is that the defense always gets to say to you, yes, we're at fault, because they can admit fault. But then what they'll do in that admission of fault, say, yeah, we're at fault, but we're equally at fault to you. And what they do is they try to make the argument to the jury when they see and hear the evidence in the case, is that they have to take the fault, the 100% fault, similar to an apple pie. And what they'll say is, we get to cut that apple pie up into shares. In the case of a two-person accident, those shares we get to cut up into two parts, one for the plaintiff and one for the defendant. And what they want to try to do is they want to try to increase the amount of fault on the part of the plaintiff as much as they can. If they can get it above 50%, then the plaintiff doesn't recover anything. Even if they get the jury to agree that the plaintiff is 25% at fault, but they still award damages to the plaintiff, that award of damages gets to be offset or reduced by 25% when the judge makes the final decision about that award. So I'll give you an example. So you're driving down the road doing nothing unusual, and you come upon traffic that's stopped, and you put on your brakes and you slow down and you don't hit the person in front of you. All good. But then you look in your rearview mirror and you see somebody barreling down the road just like you were at 60 miles an hour, but they're not stopping, and they smash in the back of you, and they caused the accident. There's no question about that. What you'll see sometimes in the case of a defendant is they'll say, well, yeah, the traffic was stopped and you did what you needed to do and you were reasonable, but my guy didn't stop because your brake lights didn't work. And because your brake lights weren't on, he didn't think that you were slowing down. And so you're equally responsible for him rear-ending you. Uh-huh. And it's that sort of thing. Or they'll say, well, you saw him in the rearview mirror. Why didn't you move over so that you didn't get hit? And they try to take all of these sort of scenarios of what a jury can consider in determining whether or not the plaintiff was at fault at all for just being rear-ended.
Sure. And
now, in Colorado, you're presumed to be at fault when you rear-end somebody. But the manner and the percentage of fault is what will be in a debate at trial. And many times jurors are smart enough to say, listen, the plaintiff didn't do anything wrong. And you can't expect them to be looking in their rearview mirror all the time for this craziness to occur and be rear-ended. It's got to be 100%.
And you've had some cases like that we've talked over the years where people were rear-ended, assumed, hey, I got no shot, but you actually got that turned around.
Yeah. Exactly. We've definitely done that. It becomes more complex when you have multiple cars, because then you divide that pie up into two, three people, four people, five people, and the jury has a little bit more work to do in their deliberations as to how to get rid of some of that fault and who really is going to be taking care of the damages and the award in the end. And those are all things that you talk about in a jury trial, and those are the things that we really have to educate jurors about, because if you don't, and they don't understand that process, we had this happen to one of my associates early on in her career, where she got a big judgment against the defendant, but then the jurors came back with a 50-50 verdict relating to fault. Plaintiff didn't get any amount of the, it was a $600,000 verdict, but because the fault was equal, they didn't get to recover anything. And so those are situations where you look at it and you say, well, did the jurors really understand what was going on, or did they not understand, and they didn't understand the fact that if they went with 50-50 fault, then there wouldn't be any recovery for the plaintiff, because why else would they give an award if they thought, I mean, they were confused, clearly. So we tried to clean that case up. It was very difficult to do.
And once they deliver that verdict, is that something then that you could, if you wanted to, retry it?
You could, if you have legal grounds to retry it.
Not just because you don't agree with it.
Yeah. I mean, if jurors come back and you don't agree with the verdict, that's generally you don't have an appeal issue. It's only legal rulings that the court has made.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. lack of seatbelt.
Yeah. So the argument relating to that by the defense, if you're not wearing your seatbelt, is that they presume that your injuries were worse than if you had worn your seatbelt. And so most jurors believe that that's the case, although with airbags now, it's a completely, mm-hmm. you can make the argument that maybe they're not as effective as they would be right. because an airbag went off. And if you have an injury accident that occurs where the speed is normally over 30 or 35 miles an hour at the time of impact, you normally have an airbag deploy. And if okay. you do, then that's limited a little bit relating to the seat belts. But obviously you want to wear your seat belt.
Can they
driving.
Tell, let's say, can you know the whole black box we've mm-hmm. heard about, especially like Tiger Woods recently?
Yes.
They're pulling that. Can they tell if that seat belt
yes.
was buckled?
Yeah, they okay. can tell. Well, they can tell whether or not it was deployed or not, whether or not it actually was used.
Okay.
And you have to have it in seatbelt in play
gotcha.
And it clipped right. in to make it work. Yeah, and you know the black boxes are interesting. I've got another case right now where we've got the same sort of issue in regards to who caused an accident and how fast my client's car was going at the time of impact. Mm. And that's black box data that shows that maybe there wasn't as much of an impact as my client would suggest there was. So that's what's going to be fought about in that case and what that data is. Wow. You know, we see black box data used in more significant accidents, not as much in your general fender bender sort of things. But if there's an issue mm-hmm. and it comes up, then it's something that the insurance companies are always trying to get to.
Right. Again, Kevin Flesh is our guest. You're listening to Legal Talk, 303-806-8886 is Kevin's number. It's always a free consultation, no matter what the legal matter may be, at Flesh and Beck Law. Now, we've got down medical emergency. What yeah. do we mean there?
So medical emergency means that the defendant, even though they caused the accident, that they may have had some medical issue that caused them to go out of control in their vehicle. So Tiger Woods is another example where there may yeah. be an issue there where there was a medical emergency before that. We don't know. And certainly, but in the case where you run into somebody and the defense is going to be that the driver had a stroke or that there was something else going on with the driver that caused them to drive out of control, that it had nothing to do with them. There was an involuntary act. Mm-hmm. You know, those come up very infrequently. It just doesn't happen very often. But when they do and the defendant raises that issue, then you get to go into all of their medical records. And there's gotcha. Always a response generally relating to these sorts of cases about what notice the defendant had about their medical condition and whether or not they should have been driving at all. Because you can still have a negligent entrustment, you can still have a negligent act in the sense of the person driving at all in the event that they knew of this medical condition mm-hmm. and that there was a chance that this would happen. Because right. again, if they knew about it and there was a fairly high likelihood that this would cause an accident, you still have the ability to go after them relating to a negligent act. And so sometimes those are really interesting cases because when they raise that emergency issue, then they also raise their medical issues generally, and you get to go back 5 or 10 years to look at those things. And generally those cases resolve because they don't want to get into a fight about whether or not something happened like that
sure.
specifically at the time of the accident.
Right, okay. And then what about an intervening cause?
Yeah, so intervening causes occur. These are cases where normally my client hasn't gotten treatment right away, or they've gotten treatment right away, let's say with an ER visit or some treatment early on, and then they stop treating for a period of time, and then they start up again. So maybe there's a 30-day gap or a 45-day gap, and the insurance company is saying to me, well, we think that something happened in between the car accident and when they started their treatment up in the second go around where that gap happened. And so they'll try to come up with evidence that there was an intervening accident or injury. They fell down. They had some other medical issue that caused right. these things that would cause them to get additional treatment because really their treatment ended early on right after the accident and nothing else. And so the intervening cause defense mm-hmm. is one that, again, can be rectified very easily by people getting regular treatment, following their doctor's orders, doing the things that they need to do, and following through with that treatment from the beginning of when the accident mm-hmm. occurred until they're released at maximum medical improvement. If they do that and there's no gap, then there's generally almost no reason for them to raise that defense.
Right. Is that usually one of the biggest kind of faults, I guess we call it, that you see is people just stop treating once they get the feeling a little bit better.
Yeah. We're always optimistic about our injuries and what's going on and whether or not we think that things have resolved. And especially during COVID, I mean, we've seen people not being able to get into doctor's office. And that's the interesting thing about this intervening cause. This next year where I have cases that sort of started during COVID, it'll be interesting to see how that is used against plaintiffs, suggesting that they could have gotten more medical treatment even during this pandemic, and whether or not jurors buy it. I think it's going to be very hard for jurors to discount personal injury cases because you didn't have a face-to-face meeting with the doctor in the last year or so.
And you wonder how easy it's going to be even to get jurors, even though, you know, you're subpoenaed to come, and what if they say, hey, medical, you know,
yeah, we're seeing that
I'm
right
over
now.
This age and I don't want to come there.
Yep, and there's certainly going to be some of that. The courts right now, Arapahoe's opened up, Douglas has opened up, Jeffco is. Denver won't start until April. Same with Adams County. I just continued a case in Ouray County on the western slope. They were having a spike in cases, and so they don't think they're going to have jurors until the end of March or beginning of April. So they're continuing everything. But once this summer, as our governor says, we're going to have a normal summer. And so if we do, I think we'll have jury trials that will be going on. And so far, the jury trials that I've had in October and then this month, the jurors have not complained about that. The ones that showed up have not complained about having any risk.
Right. It is Flesch & Beck Law. Again, fleschlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H lawfirm.com. The number is 303-806-8886. And, you know, maybe you've been trying to handle an accident on your own, and you've been working with an insurance company. We always say, hey, give Kevin's office a call. It's a free consult. And Kevin, 60 seconds here, but I'm telling you, there's many times a way you can add value. And it won't, let's just hit this real quick. If they've got an offer on the table, many times you'll just say, hey, you keep what you got.
Yep.
And if you think you can add more, then you work out an agreement that whatever you get them besides that amount.
Correct.
You will work your.
Yep. Last week I had a client that came in exactly. That's the situation. The insurance company is not being fair with them. It's an insurance company that I know we're going to have to file suit against to get full value. I explained sort of what he had on the table, what I think we could get. It was worth, you know, that we were doubling his money basically by getting involved. And and that's where he said, well, it's worth having you come on board and do the things you need to do. And we're willing to do that with them. But I've also had situations where it's not. You know, when you get done with it, you know, versus, you know, $3,000 versus $5,000 to some people, that $2,000 difference doesn't make that much of a difference to them, and they go and settle the case. But at least they've talked with me about it, and we've been able to go through that analysis.
Right. Well, Kevin, always good information.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, thank you for being with us for Legal Talk, brought to you by Flesch and Beck Law. Don't go anywhere. Coming up next, it's Functional Medicine with Dr. Ben.
Call now for a free consultation with Flesch and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886, or visit fleschlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, fleschlawfirm.com. A proven team dedicated to your legal needs.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where our reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
David R. Cishon, certified estate planner and registered financial consultant, specializes in working with people who are planning for retirement and retired clients who want to preserve and grow their assets.
Education is the greatest equalizer is my theme. It's always been. more people know, the better their decisions are, the more comfortable they become. So when people come in, we take, some people say, an excessive amount of time learning about the client themselves, who they are, what are their feelings. I don't care how much assets they have. If their assets are important to them, that's critical to me.
Call now for your free consultation with David C. Shawn of Householder Group, 720-482-1917. That's 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
It's time for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins. Dr. Ben is committed to helping patients find the root cause of their health problems. Increase your vitality to live your fullest life without drugs and surgery. Now, here's your host, Dan Muir.
And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix. And I am your host, Dan Muir. Along with me is the one and only Dr. Ben. Doc, how are you today?
Doing great. A little gray and dreary out there, but that's spring, Colorado.
Spring in Colorado. I always tell the relatives, it's only March, but I always tell the relatives, don't come in April. Just don't. It's horrible. So, you know, it'll be nicer in Minnesota in April than it is here. That's when we really get winter, but... You know, anyway, that's just how it works. So, Doc, tell us what sets functional medicine apart, let's say, from your regular practitioner? What makes you guys different over there at the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix?
Absolutely. And one of the biggest things is going to be that we listen. And this is listening not just with ears and we go, oh, they said they have that they can't lose weight or that their foot hurts or whatever, but we listen with ears that hear, we listen with eyes that see, we listen with hands that feel, all these different things. We're looking at the blood work and we're listening to that. We're looking at the brain map and we're listening to what the brain is telling us. And we're getting to this underlying why. And we've got to dig deep and we've got to listen and we've got to hear what your body is truly telling us. Because unfortunately, traditional sick care that our healthcare system has evolved into is the sick care model. Unfortunately, that has gone into this place of, you know what, I've got a symptom, so what are you going to do? You're going to take something, you're going to cut it out, you're going to block an enzyme, you're going to inhibit a receptor, you're going to try to change the physiology and cover up that symptom, basically. You know, there's very rarely, besides maybe an antibiotic, and you've got a bacteria, now we're going to kill that off. Very rarely is there any type of true healing that takes place with a medication, any type of true healing that takes place with a surgery. Most of the why that surgery took place or anything else was not addressed. And that's what we do in the functional medicine model, is we take a step back, look at where those imbalances are, get a good feel for what that body needs, and we start going through system by system by system and correcting those underlying imbalances.
And Doc, this works for anybody of any age, doesn't it? It's amazing how many young people are out there that aren't feeling well.
So I always love going over my patients of the week with you. So here we go. We had an 8-year-old in Sydney, Nebraska. He's anemic, dark circle under his eyes, not absorbing like he needs to, brain issues, bunch of different things. They drove all the way over here, at a lady from Pinedale, Wyoming. You know where that is?
I have no idea. Didn't even know there was a Pinedale, Wyoming.
Up by Jackson Hole. It's got
that's a ways.
And so she's got this extreme, in her 40s, extreme pain all the time, just body's in ache and pain, and doesn't even realize that she shouldn't, that she should feel good anymore. Had a lady come over from Glenwood Springs yesterday, same type of situation. She's tired, her digestion's off. Had a 38-year-old guy that he's an old farmer, rancher, cowboy, all those things. And yet, you know, he's on the verge of diabetes, and his brain's off, and his inflammation in his gut and fatty liver, all these different things. Had another lady come up from Longmont today, had another lady come over from Silverthorne today, had a lady come down from Douglas, Wyoming yesterday, and another guy from Casper. And so, you know, we get people from all over, and they come in, and you know, yes, their story's different, but the underlying issues are similar, and what we have to look at are similar. And we go, okay, well, this person, their liver's off, so we're going to work on that. But that person, it's not off, so we're not going to do that. But this one, they have an infection, or that one, their brain's out of balance. And so we've got basically this checklist, and we go through, okay, which systems are working, which ones aren't, this is what we're going to work on, and we start getting changes, just like the patient from Southeast Wyoming. I saw her on Tuesday, and we reviewed blood work 3 months in, and she was in a wheelchair every single day for this autoimmune condition that she has, was seeing double vision. She's in her 40s, and she put away her wheelchair a month ago, and it's in storage now. Haven't been in the wheelchair for a month. Her vision has gotten so much better. She's able to drive now, first time in a year and a half that she's driven. And you know, she has her life back, and she's just like, this is unbelievable. Her mom is, who was taking care of her, she was able to actually move out of her mom's house, and her mom was down. Like, yeah, we were hopeful, and yet, you know, nowhere at all did they envision that her body could heal as quickly as it has. And that's the important part, is to recognize that it's not me, it's not our system, it's not any of these things that fixes somebody. It's getting the blocks out of the body, and your body has that ability to heal. Your body has that ability to be vibrant, to be able to function at this optimal level. You can repair broken bones. You can heal if you take out half your liver. You can regrow your liver. Your intestines can grow back. My mom and her MS, her plaquing on her MRI went away. Your body has that potential to heal, and that's what we're able to get people to pull out from their bodies, as opposed to covering up symptoms with natural means.
You know, that had a thought as you were saying that. So it's not like I'm going to go see Dr. Ben and then get the one size fits all Dr. Ben cure all potion, am I? This sounds like it's a lot more individualized than that.
Absolutely. And it has to be. And this is where there's no magic juju berry. I always say I'd be selling that on late night TV if there was a magic
right?
juju berry. And I wish, and you know, or like the Jetsons, you know, where you get your little cube out of the wall of food, you know, and it's this, you know, it's got all your nutrients and everything. You just eat that, and there you go. There is no such thing, and there probably won't ever be such a thing, because here's what we see. We run blood sugar monitoring on every patient that comes in, whether it's that 8-year-old boy from Sydney, 73-year-old lady I saw yesterday. Everybody starts tracking their blood sugar, and they start checking to see what works for their body and what doesn't. And you know how unique and individualized we all are?
We're totally different, aren't we?
Absolutely. It's amazing. We've got tons of this of uniqueness, and yet we've got a lot of things that are similar. And we know that, you know what, if your blood sugar is going up high enough for long enough, guess what's going to happen? You're going to start getting fatty liver. You're going to get insulin resistance. Your triglycerides are going to go up. Your uric acid is going to go up. You're going to start getting gout. Your ferritin, which is your stored iron, is going to start going up. You're going to get all of these issues, and we know physiologically they happen, but each individual is going to vary. Some people, sweet potatoes are worse for their blood sugar than white potato.
And nobody would guess that.
No, you've seen on Dr. Oz, and they go, ooh, eat sweet potatoes and whatever else. Some people can eat a banana and be totally fine, even though they say bananas are not good for you. They're supposed to be high blood sugar. But other people, berries make you go up. So it's way more individualized than we've ever known.
That's really interesting. So how do you get to the point of knowing what to do for each patient?
Yeah. So when we get started with somebody, it's really about taking a step back. And I always compare it to, if you've ever seen somebody fly fish or fly fished yourself, and you've got this one fly on that line, and there's a trout behind that rock, and you throw that little fly out there, and you're like, come on, trout, jump it, and it comes up, it rises, you grab that trout, and that's what a traditional medical model looks like now, is everybody has their specialty, everybody has their one little fly they're looking at, their one little trout they're trying to get to, and if that they don't catch that one trout with that one fly, they send you to another specialist, and another specialist, and we have people that are coming in 10, 15 offices that they've been through $100,000, all these things. But what we think about is, like, back in Jesus' day, they'd throw the nets out, right?
Yeah.
And be like, what comes in? I don't know. Sometimes nothing, sometimes a boot, sometimes 20 different types of fish. And that's what we do, is we take that step back. We don't get the magnifying lens out and look at any one thing. We get out the whole shebang and be able to go, okay, well, this person has an infection here. They've got inflammation markers coming from this. We've got some fatty liver going on. We potentially have some insulin resistance. Their vitamin D is good, so we don't have to give vitamin D. And we just go through step by step through that process of figuring out what is out of balance and what we can do to correct those individual things.
And you're listening to the Functional Medicine Show, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix. And if you want to get a hold of Dr. Ben, give him a call at 970-282-1173, or you can go to fmcenters.com. You know, Doc, I was looking on your Facebook page, and you got the videos on there. And this one, this title I found really intriguing. And it's entitled, Mindset is Crucial for Getting Healthy. And, you know, that is so true, because even right on down to just making the phone call to you to see what it's going to take for me to feel better, that's a mindset. That's a commitment just to even make the phone call.
Well, a good way to think about this. How long have we been doing this show, Dan?
A little over a year.
and have you ever said anything about, man, I'm gonna get up there sometime?
Yeah.
and that probably wasn't just last week the first time you said that.
No. As a matter of fact, I've been wanting to get back up there ever since I was up there to meet you before we did this show. And it really is a mindset. But I also know the commitment that I'm going to need to be able to do this. And it's crucially important, but it also means that, you know, you've got to be serious to move forward with this.
Absolutely. Again, there is no magic juju berry.
No.
And there is no magic diet that, hey, do this keto diet for 30 days and you're going to be fixed. Those don't work. Remember, this is a process, and I always say you have to fall in love with the process of being healthy. And that's the people that truly succeed, are the ones that are like, you know what? Kind of like saving for retirement. Some people just save for retirement because they're supposed to, or work does for them, or they're like scared to death of having to eat cat food when they retire, whatever else it is. But, you know, for the people that are truly successful, they get excited each month about seeing their statement, and like, man, we're up another 30,000 over the last 6 months or whatever it is. And they're like, wow, okay, this is great. Now we're going to be able to, you know, keep our house. We're not going to have to downsize. We're going to be able to go on that cruise. Remember when you used to be able to go on cruises?
I do. I remember that. Yeah. Back in the good old days. Back all the way back to 2019, all the way back then.
We're going to be able to go on a cruise every 6 months, or, you know, be able to buy that side-by-side and go out in the mountains and go cruising around or whatever it is. And they get excited about that. And they're saving because they're falling in love with that thought of being financially stable. And that's what you need to do, you know, for the people that have that mindset, that have that ability. And not everybody's there right off the bat, but even if you're not quite there, but you know deep down you've got to do this, and you've got to have your why in place. People do things for two reasons. They do it to avoid pain. So they're like, man, my dad died of a heart attack when I was 53. Oh, and I did not want to do that. Or my mom had Alzheimer's, and I saw her go down that route, and that is the last thing I want to go down. I'd rather, you know, take me out back and put me down than go through that. So some people do it to avoid pain. Other people do it to go towards pleasure. And like, I want to see my kids graduate from college, or my grandkids. I want to be able to play with them on the floor, be able to roll around, wrestle with them, and get up and not have to be like, you know, okay, here goes grandpa, let's help him up off the ground, you know, but to be able to continue to do things and have fun. And or maybe you can't do something now, and you can't go for a hike, or you can't go for a bike ride, or do the fun stuff that you want to do, and you want to go towards that pleasure of getting back to that place of being healthy. And that's what our most successful patients are, the ones that they have their why, and then their why figured out, and they're motivated. And when I ask people, even during that exam, if they tear up, I know, you know, 99% sure this person's going to get better, and this person's going to get their success, because they are driven. There's an emotional charge to it. They are ready to get their life back. But here's the big but, and mindset's important too for the duration, because how many of you out there, if we were on Facebook, I'd say give me a thumbs up on the Facebook post, but give a thumbs up if you're in your car. How many of you out there have gone on an HCG diet, have done keto, have done paleo, have done Weight Watchers, whatever it is, and then you're not? And you're back up 30 pounds, and you're still getting worse, and you're still getting sicker. And then you're like, oh, I got to do that cabbage diet, or that grapefruit diet, or whatever the latest and greatest thing is. You know, and then we kind of fade, and you lose weight, and you feel a little bit better, and it's not as motivating. And you're like, well, I'm not as bad as I used to be, and it really wasn't that bad, was it? And yet it was. And that's where most people kind of forget, and they lose their motivation, and then it falls back to where it was before.
And you always seem to get back to where you were before after doing something like that. You know, I'm sitting here as you're talking, hitting the thumbs up on, yeah, keto, yep, you know, the cabbage diet, the grapefruit diet, the HCG. I've even done that, you know, just, yep, thumb. And yep, sure enough, every time I've done one of those, I've had results, but they don't last because I don't change my lifestyle. When I'm done with the diet, I'm, you know, back at the Golden Corral or Pigout Palace or whatever it might be, doing what I like to do, and that is, you know, stuff my face full of food.
So let me ask you this, Dan. Have you ever trained and run a marathon?
No, nor will I.
Okay, so let's say somebody, how about a 5K?
No, I don't run. Just don't do that.
So let's say somebody trains for a half marathon.
Okay.
And they're like, okay, I've got this plan. I looked up online, 12 weeks to a 12 miler, whatever it is. And they've got a partner, and they're motivated, and they're out every day, and they run a mile a day, and then 2 miles a day, and 3 miles a day, and they're up, and they run their half marathon. And then they're in shape for the rest of their life, right?
Oh, yeah, that's all it takes. That's it. You're done. But sure, there, you're done.
Yeah, but that's what a lot of people think is, sweet, I'm down 30 pounds, I'm down 12 pounds, I quit drinking for a month, I quit smoking for a month, I think I'm healthy.
That's right.
And then we fade back. And so what we do with our patients is we create habits, we create new patterns, we give them the ability to truly understand what makes their blood sugar go up, what makes it go down, what makes inflammation happen, how can they keep losing weight, how can they feel good, what happens if they do put a little weight back on, what can they do on their own, what you can do to truly know your body. And that's the important part. And yet, you know, 99% of our patients, they get to a point where they would rather feel good than have that 5-minute satisfaction of, what are you going to drive through on your way home, Dan?
Well, you know, on the way here, it was Arby's.
Yeah, yeah. So get some curly fries. Get your...
get my roast beef.
Your roast beef sandwich, your curly fries, you know, that Arby's sauce on there. And that, oh, man, it tastes so good. But, you know, for almost every single person that we work with, they get to that place where, you know, if they ate that after a couple months in our program, they would feel sick, they'd be bloated, they'd feel yucky, inflamed, whatever it is. And they're like, you know what, it tasted good, but 20 minutes later, it's not worth it. I feel so good, and then I don't. It's just not worth it to have that short-term satisfaction. And we're talking about habits. Habits define people. You can have good habits or you can have bad habits. And guess what? They both define you.
Well, that is so true. And I know that from, I used to be what I call a Coke addict. So I would drink Coca-Cola like crazy. I mean, I would probably go through a 6 or 12 pack a day. And then I got into the energy drinks and all that kind of stuff. And finally, I had to just wean myself off of it. And I did. Now, if I have a sugar soda, it really messes with me. I can't do it. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it just gets, it's sweeter than it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
I've had people that they get their bodies healthy and they go and have a Blizzard from Dairy Queen or whatever, and they take a couple bites and they're like, man, it's just way too sugary. Or when you start out and you're like, hey, have a square of dark chocolate, and people are like, oh, that's so bitter. You know, give me a Hershey's Kiss, and then down the road you're like, hey, that dark chocolate's actually pretty good, and then go have a Hershey's Kiss, and it's like, ugh, that it is just, you know, fakey and way too much sugar, whatever is going on in there. So
what I'm trying to do is validate what you're saying, because I know that if I were to do a lot of these things that you say to do, because of my experience with sugar sodas, that I could train my body to basically start rejecting the bad stuff that I like to put in it.
Yep, absolutely. And so, you know, deep down, your body knows what to do. Yes, it might have some cravings for sugar. Yes, it might have some cravings for high-fat foods and things like that. But, you know, if you give it the right things, I always say that, you know, yes, food is medicine, mm-hmm. but more importantly, food can be our poison. And that
right.
if we have that bad stuff coming in, it's going to cause way more of a problem than eating some kale or eating some Brussels sprouts or something is going to counterbalance that. So it's almost that there's no amount of good stuff that's going to counterbalance you going to Arby's and eating those curly fries and roast beef sandwich after this. It's not like, oh, but I'm going to have a salad for dinner, so I can do that now. That's not how it works.
So let's talk a little bit again about habits. So I'm trying to formulate some new habits myself. Like, so when I come here on Thursdays, I know this is going to seem kind of silly, but I come here on Thursdays and we're on the 12th floor here at the broadcast center. And so every time as of late, when I leave here, I take the stairs down, 12 flights of stairs. Yep. And the next day my legs are actually sore from doing that. Well, today I had this great idea. Well, if I'm going down the stairs, I'm going to go up the stairs. And today I made it to floor 6 before I completely ran out of oxygen, and I had to take the elevator the rest of the way. But you know what my vision was before I took the stairs was? I could take the elevator and lean against the elevator wall on my way up like I normally do, half asleep, or I can at least try to take the stairs. Doc, can I develop some better habits by doing these types of things?
Yeah, you know, and that's what I want people to do, is just start looking at your day. And here's the biggest thing for people and for you to get healthier is to become more aware. And unfortunately, so many people are sleepwalking through life. They're letting the news tell them what to think. They're numbing themselves down by watching whatever, you know, shows are out now, and you know, you can't go to movies, but they're, you know, people are just getting numbed out, just trying to get through the day, get through life. And for one thing, we don't have 500 years. You don't have 500 years to accomplish your goals, to be the best you can be. And so habits are going to be one of those biggest things that are going to help you to get there. And so one of the great ones to do is just be aware of what is going on around you and what you're using. And so when you run out of toothpaste, look at your toothpaste and go, hey, is this the best toothpaste I can use for my health, and it's going to be, you know, the least amount of additives and all these things? Or, you know, what type of cleaning product am I using? What is in the sausage that I got? And is it, wow, I can't even read some of those ingredients, versus, okay, that one's chicken and some spinach and some feta cheese, and that's pretty much it. Okay, well, let's make better choices. And so just the more you're aware, the more you're going to be able to make those changes. Just like if you work in an office setting or own your own business, and you're walking around, and if you change your mind frame from, okay, I'm just going to rush to the next room, but hey, okay, but let me look a little bit more closely just and pay attention to these things of, oh, you know what, there's a scuff on that baseboard there, or there's a dent in the wall there, or we need the cleaners to work on that a little bit. You start seeing those things, and then you just become more aware of it, and you're all of a sudden your office is cleaner, or your house is cleaner, or whatever it is. So same thing with your body. You just have to become more aware, look at what's happening, and same thing here. You know what? Okay, two flights of stairs. Great, I got that. Next week, let's go for three. Hey, I got three. Let's get down the elevator, take the next 9 floors up. But you just start creating these habits and day in and day out. So for me, my habit, and it's evolved over the years to get to this point, I'm up at 4:50. I get on the treadmill. I do my prayers, my reading, my writing, my journaling, everything I can. Then I do my workout. I'm out by like 6:15, 6:30, and get into the kitchen, make my breakfast, make my lunch, the kids, all their food, get everybody ready to go. And it's just these habits that we need to put in on a daily basis that are going to create it. But then you've also got bad habits too. And those bad habits help create your health as well.
Yes, they do. And why is it bad habits are so much more difficult to overcome than it is to formulate good habits?
Yeah. It's the reason why they're there. There's usually a psychological component to it, and it's a cover up for an emotional hurt, or it's a stress response, and it's how we eat. You know, people look at food and they use it as celebration. They use it as mourning.
Yes.
They use it as whatever they can. And so, you know, it's usually why do people drink 6 beers a night? You know, it's not because, oh, I just love beer. You know, after the first or second beer, you don't love it that much. You know, why do people smoke? Oh, that taste in my mouth. I just love that cigarette. No, it's what it's doing to our state, what it's doing to our brain, our serotonin levels, all these things. So as you start thinking about your mindset, as you start thinking about getting your body as healthy as possible, you've got to come from that place of why am I doing this? What's my mindset? What kind of new habits can I create? And ultimately, whether you've got every ounce of gumption right now or not, it doesn't matter. If you're ready, if you're wanting to get your life back, if you're wanting to change the course of the next 10, 20, 40 years, give us a call, 970-282-1173. Talk to Alicia. She'll go through the process with you, let you know exactly how we're going to be able to get you your health back. We're booking out into the end of April right now, but we'll get you in as soon as possible if you're committed, if you're ready to do this. And if you can, then we're going to take you hand in hand and take you through this process.
And come in with a proper mindset. Doc, this has been great as always. You've given me a lot to think about, and I really appreciate you.
Absolutely, Dan. You have a great day.
Thanks, Doc. You too. Have a great week. And once again, you've been listening to the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben, brought to you by the Functional Medicine Centers of Fort Collins and Phoenix. Give Dr. Ben and the gang a call over there at 970-282-1173 or go to fmcenters.com. I've been your host, Dan Muir. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you for joining us for the Functional Medicine Show with Dr. Ben. Contact the Functional Medicine Center of Fort Collins now by visiting functionalmedicinefortcollins.com or call 970-716-0079. Join Dan Muir and Dr. Ben next time right here on KLZ.